All right. Hello, everyone. Sounds like I missed a great TED Talk. I was reading the forum. So a few more to read. I thought about coming in for the TED Talk, but then I thought, you know, if I wait till later to read the forum, I'll really be too sleepy to understand what I'm reading, you know? So I thought I better read the forum. So that's what I did. And I enjoyed that very much, you know, reading the forum, what you all write in there is very inspirational. I thought it was interesting that I came in and heard Dawn talking about the TED Talk and saying that the lady said something like, sometimes you wonder if you're being punked, I guess, about the spiritual path, right? That's a great intro into what I have to share tonight. Because I am reading from Bernadette Roberts. And Bernadette Roberts does not always paint the spiritual path or the experience of awakening as happiness, peace, love, light, bliss, etc. And sometimes when I'm reading her, I don't know what to think, which is good because then I just stop thinking. But last week we ended with the beginning of some of her tough teachings. And we're going to go further into her tough teachings tonight. But last week, we ended with her teaching, basically that whatever we love, you know, like Jacqueline loves Connie and Connie loves Jacqueline, right? He gets two of them here. We'll use them as our example. Yeah, that's what they say. Look at them shaking their heads. See, they believe that. They believe that. And what we learned, what we learned last week was this love that we think is love, like this sisterly slash friendship, because it's really a sisterly slash friendship between Connie and Jacqueline, that this love that we think is love, whether it's love for our sister, love for our children, love for God, love for our spouse, love for whatever, that when the ego falls away, that love falls away too. And the reason that love falls away is because that was purely egoic. Right? And so without the ego, you can't have that same experience of love. And you know, these are the kind of tough teachings that come from Bernadette Roberts. Right? I actually think that if we listen to Bernadette Roberts and we hang on here, we must really want truth. You know, we're not after the confetti or the glitter or the, you know, we're after the truth. And at the same time, I got to say, until I walk the path that Bernadette Roberts has walked all the way to the end, I cannot promise you, I cannot sit here and say I 100% agree with everything she says. Sometimes when I read her, I wonder if that was just her experience of the path, right? And if everybody has the same experience. And in fact, I think when I began this teaching way back now, it's been many weeks, I think I kind of began the teaching of Bernadette Roberts with that kind of caveat, you know, that this is her experience that we're looking at. The questions that might come up is, you know, especially if her experience appears, you know, somewhat negative, and it does, why in the world would we even want to look at her experience? Well, first of all, because I think I think this is an absolutely genuine experience. I don't think there's anything in here that isn't absolutely genuine. And secondly, it gives us the opportunity to contemplate some things that not every teacher talks about. Not every teacher gives us the opportunity to contemplate. For example, the fact that the love that we feel right now, which we think are the, you know, I mean, like my love for Jasmine, for example, you know, if you were to ask me on a human term, let's forget the spiritual path for a moment. If you were to ask me on a human term, what was my greatest joy in this lifetime? Even now, I want to cry saying it. Hands down, it's Jasmine, right? Hands down. Like, there's not even, there have been some other really wonderful things, you know, traveling and, and you know, friendships, and you know, I have wonderful times with Ron. I mean, Jamie, I love Jamie. You know, but Jasmine is like it for the human in this lifetime. And so when she talks about the fact that you take that precious, precious love that is the height of the human experience for me, and she points to the fact that that love, as I experience it now, could completely fall away, or even she even says, will completely fall away when the ego falls away. That's, you know, that's, for some people, that's shocking. Fortunately, I had the chance to contemplate. Do you want to say something, Kathy? I thought I saw your hand go up. Please, go ahead and unmute yourself.
I just wanted to ask you a question, Regina, because when I listened to, I think I Am That from last week.
Yes.
Would you say that the description that Nisargadatta gave, and this is just my words, but after like that kind of second falling away that he had of himself, where he, I don't know if it was a question of somebody asking him a question, and it was almost like he said, I can't answer you in the same way, or
he said something like, I don't have affection for persons anymore.
Yes.
I can't.
Okay. So would you say those are kind of the same thing?
Yeah. In fact, Kathy, that was perfect that you said that, because it's kind of where I was heading. I was going to say I had a wonderful opportunity to contemplate this last week because I found Nisargadatta saying the same thing in the same week. But you know, God throws these things at us, right? I mean, how can I make this happen? Have these two teachings land in the same week? So it really gave me the opportunity to contemplate it deeply. And it's very difficult to put into words what I got to. But what I got to was, of course. You know, like, it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense that the way, even though my ego is fairly purified compared to how it once was, right? It's quite purified. I would never say that I'm egoless unless I wanted to be a liar, which I don't. My experience of the world is still through the ego, or through what I'm going to call the sense of being a person. That's how I experience each of you. That's how I experience the spiritual path. That's how I experience my contemplations and meditation. That's how I experience this beautiful ring, which I just cut, you know, just caught my eye while I was doing this. That's how I experience my daughter. That's how I experience my challenges in life. That's how I experience my pleasures in life. There's nothing I don't experience through this sense of being a person, albeit somewhat purified, right? So if the sense of person falls away completely, that way of experiencing has to fall away completely too, right? So after contemplating this, I got to, of course. I mean, it only stands to reason. Now, what is the new experience? I can't say. But it only stands to reason that everything would change. And, you know, if we listen very carefully to other teachers, although they may not be as direct as Bernadette is, or as Nisargadatta was on Wednesday night, they talk about this period of disorientation. In fact, Jesus talks about it in the Course, right? You know, Byron Katie in A Thousand Names for Joy, I mean, she talks about it in a very joyous and humorous way. But she talks about how she'd pass someone on the street and they would say like, oh, have a nice day. And she'd just bust out laughing because they thought there was a day, right? Right? I mean, so what she's really describing there is an experience that is so entirely different from our current experience that we can't even begin to imagine it. You know, and that includes Connie and Jacqueline's love for each other. If one of these two ladies should happen to awaken, you know, it might even put a strain on the relationship Because the other one, you know, let's say Connie awakens first, right? And Jacqueline doesn't. Connie likes that idea. Connie is now going to have a completely different way of experiencing Jacqueline. And as a result, she is going to respond to Jacqueline and be with Jacqueline in a completely different way. And Jacqueline might be, you know, what the heck, you know, right? It could possibly, we'll just make this up, you know, appear to tear them apart. Although certainly, you know, whatever Connie's experiencing, she could never experience being torn apart, but that doesn't mean Jacqueline doesn't, right? And so this is why, you know, Jesus, I think Jesus was very, very firm with these types of teachings too, right? Jesus talked about how you needed to leave your mother and your father and your children and your fields. Remember that? And it's funny because, you know, I think some Christians read that and there's this thought in their mind, oh, he must not really mean that. He must not really mean that. And it may not be a giving up of those attachments. Like Connie, until the day she awakens, may feel it about Jacqueline exactly the way she does now. It's not, it might not be that she lets go of, you know, in an egoic way, lets go of that attachment to Jacqueline. Maybe she will, but maybe she won't, right? Maybe she'll feel exactly about Jacqueline all the way until the divine bursts through. And then that attachment and that feeling about Jacqueline that she has now through the egoic Connie big sister personality just falls away too. Right? Because that Connie, that egoic Connie person is just obliterated. Right?
But when you think about that, you know, I'm listening to this. Aren't there people that are awake that still love? I mean, Byron Katie has loved her children. Like, you know, she'll say it, you know. Reading A Course in Miracles is actually saying that. Special love is not, you know, and I would feel guilty from that because I have special love, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, I wonder how much I'm in charge of this. Probably not. Just my willingness, you know, because
And the way that I understand Byron Katie, and I don't listen to her a lot, so I need to say that as a caveat, but I have listened to her some, and I have heard her talk about her relationship with her children. And the way that I understood her is, yes, there's still an understanding that at the physical level, these are her children, but she has no special, there's no difference between the way she would love her child or the way she would love me if I was in front of her, right? And don't we all know, even though we may sit there and at the egoic level lament the fact that my relationship with my sister is going to be different or my relationship with my child is going to be different, don't we all somewhere know that that love has to be equal for everyone without difference or it's not genuine? Right? When Jasmine is here, I love staring at her face. You know, I mean, that face is my favorite face on the planet Earth. When Jacqueline's here, I enjoy being with Jacqueline, but I don't stare at her face in the same way. Right? Let's just be honest. Connie might, but I don't. So see, there's something there. There's still a specialness there. As seeing Jasmine as my daughter, which means there has to be a me. You see? So I was really happy that Nisargadatta gave me an additional opportunity to contemplate this because, like I said, I just came up with, of course. And in that of course, any resistance that I might have had to losing this specialness, it feels like it just kind of died too. It's not like, again, it's not like I can force the situation. I can't force myself to stop having these special feelings for Jasmine right now. But I can accept that they will be obliterated by awakening and accept it with total joy rather than resistance. which may sound like a paradox to some people, I don't know, but to me it's not a paradox. Like I said, Connie may feel the way she does about Jacqueline till the day the divine busts through. And that's when it changes, right? Any other questions? Or, yeah, George says her children perceive her love as special. Well, actually, doesn't Byron Katie also say one of her children still hates her, right? So they even, you know, right, that even that's special. Hate is as special as love, you know, because that child that still hates her because Katie wasn't the mom moms are supposed to be. You know, that's a special relationship right there, right? That child doesn't hate other people who are, you know, doing whatever they're doing, but hates Katie because she wasn't the mom she was supposed to be and hasn't yet forgiven. At least the last time I heard her talk about it. Now things change and I could have heard her talking about it 5 years ago. So, but at that point, there was still one of her children who hated her. The others had come to love her. All right, well, we only have about 11 minutes. Let me go ahead and just read a little bit. Again, this is not, you know, peace, love, joy reading, but it's good stuff for us to contemplate. So she says, and I'm starting on page 21, the second paragraph. She says, without the ego, we do not at first recognize the divine on its own ground, which ground seems only to be a great emptiness or void in ourselves. We keep looking for the divine on our own egoic ground and cannot understand why it does not appear. And again, she's talking about her relationship to the divine, but this might be, if it was me, my relationship to Jasmine, or if it was Connie, her relationship to Jacqueline and Katie, you know. It might be, you know, Jasmine might be right in front of me and I might be looking for those feelings that I remembered, you know, looking for that specialness that I remembered and saying like, where the heck did it go? Where is it? You know, and that's really what she's doing now. She's like looking for that specialness she felt for God and saying, "It, you know, where is it? It's gone." Without the ego, we do not at first recognize the divine on its own ground, which ground seems only to be great emptiness or void in ourselves, right? Where it used to be, it is no longer there. We keep looking for the divine on our own egoic ground and cannot understand why it does not appear. Now here she says, we are in for a struggle here on every level of consciousness. And there will be no peace until all the energies, will, desires, and feelings have been totally submitted to the divine, a dark, unrecognized, silent void in ourselves. Now, that reminds me of something that Jesus said in the Course. I think it's in the Manual for Teachers. I can't quote it perfectly, but maybe one of you can. And maybe it's in the Miracle Principles. It's either in the back of the book or the beginning of the book. but I think it's the back. He says something. Yeah, I think it's the Manual for Teachers. He says something about that this doesn't need to be painful, but it most likely will be. You guys remember that line? It doesn't need to be painful, but it most likely will be. At the beginning of Bernadette's book, she told us the reason she was writing the book was so that this did not have to be as hard for other people as it was for her. She says it was difficult for her because she didn't know what was happening, right? And so she's telling us so that if we have the same experience of her, we have some intellectual understanding, literally, intellectual understanding of what's occurring. So maybe we won't suffer like she did. Again, Jesus said it doesn't have to be painful, but most likely will be. And she's trying to educate us so that it will not be as hard for us. She told us at the beginning of the book, the reason that she suffered is because she had in no way been prepared for this. None of the books she had read talked about this experience. She did not know what was happening, right? Small confession. Again, I'm not egoless, so that's not what I'm trying to say here. But recently, it is as if another hole got blown through my ego. There are some places where there used to be something where there's not now. And I don't know how else to describe that. I also find a couple places where there still are little small hits. So I kind of experience myself as having a bigger hole, right? Jacqueline was the first to notice it. She noticed a change in me immediately. There's a definite change. And when she first asked me about it and I answered her, I said, the only way I can describe it is like there's an emptiness where there used to be something. And I said, I don't know if it will come back or not. So let's not say anything to anyone. I don't know if it will come back or not. But it's been about a month now, and it hasn't returned at this point. So I think in a small way, I understand what she's talking about. Right? Like there are things that, you know, like this whole thing. Let me go to this attack we recently, cyber attack, right? Used to, not that long ago, one of the things that I would still get triggered on was technical stuff. And people are shaking their heads. I think some people understand. And the reason I think is because I felt so helpless, right? Like, you know, I need to get this fixed. It's my job to get this fixed. I can't get this fixed. You know, I have to get this fixed, and I can't get this fixed, right, at the same time. And that created a frustration. Well, we just went through this, you know, from my seat, this huge technical issue that lasted for 8 days, affected a lot of people, and it's like it had nothing to hit on. It's not that I wasn't getting triggered. It's that the I that used to get triggered wasn't there anymore. Right? It wasn't hitting anything. This was literally just what was happening in the moment. And what was funny about it was, even in my mind, because it kept going on and kept going on and kept going on, you know, for 8 days, I'd wake up and there it was again. And I kept thinking, oh, maybe this is going to go on until I do get triggered. Like it's testing me. It's seeing, you know, it's like somebody just keeps poking you, keeps poking you, keeps poking you. Yeah, my own version of whack-a-mole, right? Except that it never hit anything, right? So we could genuinely say that I did not experience technical difficulty in the way that I would have experienced that type of technical difficulty there because of a void in me. Whatever it was that used to get triggered wasn't there to be triggered anymore. There was a void. And to some degree, I can see how some people might describe that void as not caring. Because it has that feeling about it. It's kind of like, well, I don't really care. Yet at the same time, I was working on it night and day and you know, not eating, not sleeping, not showering. Which it looks like caring a lot, but I was just doing what I was to do. There was this not caring feeling, but it wasn't a negative feeling. You know, like when you say, oh, I don't care about her. It sounds negative, right? It wasn't that kind of a feeling. It was the only word that's coming to my mind, but maybe it's a good word, is it was a blue sky feeling, right? The blue sky, I mean, peace, happiness, you know, not blissed out, just this ongoing contentment while I'm doing whatever it is that I'm doing. And Jacqueline was there with me for a lot of it, so she can attest to this. She can tell you that I didn't even once go, shit, not again, or anything like that, right? Because the me that would have done that part of me, appears to be empty. Right? Now, again, that doesn't mean there aren't still other little targets here that are still kind of getting hit a little bit. So it's like I'm emptier, but I would not say I am empty. But that kind of helps me to understand what she's talking about here when she says she was looking for God, because I was looking for that frustration. I kept thinking it'll be here tomorrow. If this thing's still here tomorrow, I bet tomorrow I finally say, oh shit, you know, tomorrow I get angry, right? But it never happened. It never happened. But she's saying she was looking for God on her egoic terms, which, you know, it probably feels a lot better to find a negative trigger never happen. It might be a little more horrifying to find a positive love never happening, or what you had previously defined as a positive love, right? So she says she kept looking for it, couldn't find it, suffered looking for it until she fully submitted herself to this interior emptiness, virtually our own nothingness. She says it's not easy. It requires enormous faith. But I think that, again, is her experience. I think that if there's some understanding that it's going to feel like there's nothing where there used to be something, it might be easier to submit to it. You know, like you're used to a billboard, and now the billboard's gone and there's just the air, the space, the sky where the billboard used to be. And if you have an understanding of that, it might not be so hard. She says, indeed, the entire acclimating process will stretch the human limits. From this point on, we can no longer direct our own journey. We seem unable to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps or return to our previous comfortable state. You know what she's talking about there? Self-will is gone. She's talking about even the spiritual path was happening to some degree in the way she thought she wanted it to. You know, like, you know, the way she wanted to worship God, the way she wanted to feel with God, the way she wanted. And now that's gone. And she can't bring it back. The only thing we can really do is grin and bear it or suffer. In experience, it may feel as if a hole were being burned through the center of our being. So we made it through a whole paragraph today. But again, it gives us something to contemplate, right? Because I think often when people think about enlightenment, they think about the person being enlightened. But at the same time, we always hear the person is never enlightened. And she's describing how the person disappears as well as the personal experience. Right? All right, releasing the mic. Thank you.